And welcome back to How Do I Get Your Job? Today we're talking with Parker Bixby, a music teacher and band director for the Mercer Island High School Marching and Concert Band programs. How are you today, Parker?
Doing great.
Good to hear.
So, Parker, we sort of want to get some insight for any potential students who are going into similar fields that might be at UW right now. So could you tell us a little bit about what an average day looks like for you? And does that change or shift at all throughout the school year?
Sure. I'm not sure any of us in any profession have an average day right now. But that being said, you know, maybe I can paint a picture of what it looks like. I teach primarily high school. Our district is a little different than most music education systems in that all of the music teachers, all of the band directors teach across multiple grade levels. So we work in what's called a team teaching model. But mostly I'm a high school music teacher. Mostly I teach high school band. So a typical day will usually start pretty early. You know, I'm at the music building probably around 6:45 in the morning. Students sometimes are meeting me at the door. They're there when I get there for all of the before school music activities, practice, music sectionals, meetings, those sorts of things. My day begins where I get to teach fifth graders. I'm a trumpet player, and I get the opportunity to start all of the district's fifth grade students. So my first class of the day is with fifth grade trumpet players, and I have about 40 of those fifth grade trumpet players, and they're, boy, if I could, I just hope that everybody out there were able to start their day with 40 10-year-olds in a room. It is a blast. It's a great way to start the day. And then I have four other teaching assignments throughout the day. Depending on the day, it's a different teaching assignment because we have a block schedule that rotates. I teach a percussion ensemble. So all of the district's high school percussionists are in one class, and I teach, depending on the time of year, that's marching or concert band or percussion ensemble class. I teach a freshman 9th grade only concert band. I teach a 10th grade through 12th grade concert band. And then I teach at the end of the day, our last period of the day is our wind ensemble, which are our most advanced students. And all of those concert bands are taught independently, but they come together to form one giant group when we're teaching our marching band program. And that happens on a Thursday or a Friday, depending on whether there's a game that weekend as well. That's kind of a typical day. You throw in some meetings and about 300 emails, and that's about a normal day at Mercer Island High School for me.
Cool. And what was your educational pathway into your current job?
Yeah, I might start after high school. I knew I wanted to be a musician and be a teacher actually before I left high school. So I went into my educational pathway knowing at least what I thought would be the outcome I wanted to pursue. So I think that's important to say, because many people discover certainly a pathway into education as a musician later in their life because they really value those growth moments. And I was lucky enough to really see that that was something I wanted to do early. So I went to high school in Southern California. I didn't particularly love Southern California. So I went, did some undergraduate years. My first 3 years of undergraduate, I went to the University of Montana and got to spend my time in the mountains and fly fishing. And then I actually transferred out to the University of Washington. And I finished my last 2 years at UW studying with Roy Cummings and Tim Salzman and Mike Brockman and the amazing teachers in the UW music department. And that was my undergraduate degree. And I got my placement here in Mercer Island right out of high school. That was 20, or right out of college. That was 27 years ago. So a very direct path to this job. I took a 2-year leave and got my master's degree back at the University of Montana in music education and in conducting as well. And then came right back to the job and have been here ever since.
Okay, that's awesome. Quite the long journey then.
Yeah.
So for anyone who is maybe in your situation or in a different one where they don't totally know quite yet what in music they want to work with, what are the kind of experiences a student who wants to work in music eventually, either music education or band direction, what should they really be focusing on trying to get right now?
At the college level?
Yeah, at the college level.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think any music education student who's at the university can feels and understands the feeling that there's just more to learn than they can possibly get to. There's just more to do than they can possibly get to. Probably just like any other major in regards to what's exciting and what is really going to eventually drive them forward and help them define who they want to be, either as a teacher or as a musician. So my first piece of advice would, in regards to what they should be pursuing, is they should just be pursuing questions. They should just be really interested in the questions. Why is something taught a certain way? Why does this one conversation point keep coming back into the conversation, regardless of what class they're in, what year they're in? Always, every young musician was not going to go wrong by developing their musicianship. But as they get older, and as they get more experience, as they get into the 300 and 400 level classes, especially in the education program at the University of Washington, they really need to start shifting some of their focus, not away from their musicianship, but into how do I examine my musicianship to help me understand students, my students. And they have an amazing opportunity to look around them and say, let me just kind of examine and learn about my peers. Look at their learning journey. Who came to it easily? Who is struggling? Who puts in twice as much time as everybody else? Which of your professors inspire you to practice and learn? Which of your professors did you maybe not relate to and connect with, but on the long journey, you discovered they were giving you the good stuff from the very beginning and you didn't pick up on it? So I think as a music education major, primarily, I'm speaking about consciously observing as a future educator is a powerful step. And the sooner you can do it, the sooner you can start to make the transition as a professional. Because the one truth as an educator, regardless of music or anything else, is the reason you stay an educator is almost never the same reason you became an educator. So when you get into the building and you start to develop your musicianship on your instrument, and then explore what's this scary world of going out as a 21-year-old and teaching people 3 years younger than you, that's a journey. And it really can start that junior, senior year of your time in college.
So you've been with the Mercer Island Band program for almost 30 years now, and it's been a pretty successful program, doing tons of things like the Rose Parade and a bunch of other parades. In your experience, what is the key to developing a successful program such as this one?
Yeah. You know, the band world in particular is just full of hardworking problem solvers who are aspiring to have and provide the experiences that inspired them, right? So like my colleagues and the young teachers who are coming out of college right now have all of this energy and enthusiasm and ability to create these experiences, and not all of them do. So I've thought about this question a lot. What is it about the path that we have taken here at Mercer Island, and what is it about the things I have had no control over that have allowed this program to flourish and become what it is? And so I alluded to two things there that I think are critical to the answer to your question, right? Number one is you can't do it alone. And for me, my colleagues are the best music educators I've ever worked with. And the way that they problem solve and the way that they work as a team to set goals and move us forward as a program is a superpower. Right. So I'm doing the podcast right now, but the Mercer Island Band program is Mr. Krieger and Mr. Bentley and Mr. Thompson and Ms. Smith and Ms. McClellan. There is no one person responsible for developing this program. So number one, to young music educators, it's build relationships. It's create teams. It's share the load. It's design a future that incorporates other people and builds on their power. And the sooner you start to do it, the better. That's number one. You can only do so much. Number two is all those things that I just talked about that are out of your control, which is, are you in a district that has the ingredients or is open to giving you the ingredients and what you need to be successful? And those are difficult questions to ask. And they're especially difficult questions to ask when you're a first year teacher or a second year teacher. So in those specific districts, I would say to music educators who are looking for a job, ask or find a teacher in that district. Ask a colleague, ask a mentor, ask a band director. What have you heard about this district? What do you know about their funding? What do you know about their administrators? What do you know about the community? What do you know about the schedule? What do you know about their focus on electives and the fine arts? And if you're excited about what you hear, you can probably build something exciting. If you see roadblocks and challenges in front of you at every level, those are going to be the questions and the obstacles to lean into and to start addressing and see if that you can find a way to build past them. And then my last thing on that, those are my two big things. My last thing on that to answer your question is about what should you be focused on and what should you be looking for is late nights and early mornings and more work than you can get to in your amount of time, because you're a CEO. You're managing money, you're managing your employees, which are your students. You're caretaking the education of each and every one of those students. You're addressing and presenting to their parents why those options are important. You're communicating with your administrator, you're fundraising, you're spending that money, and you're developing those 2-month, 2-year, and 5-year plans. And that takes time. So no matter how passionate you are about that fantastic musical moment, it is really important to know that if you're not prepared to put the time in, it's difficult to expect big things in your program. And I wish that was a different reality, but that's the case.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. Not going to come easy.
Right. More hair when I started teaching.
It happens. So
I would say you had more hair when I was still in school.
Yeah, I know. It's your fault.
So with that, besides sort of that like stress, are there any parts of the jobs over the years that have been the consistently frustrating or stressful elements outside of that to an extent?
Oh yeah. I mean, all the stressors are consistent actually, right? But they are always going to be balanced by what brings you joy. And there's a reason that the attrition rate for teachers and music educators in particular is so high in education in general. And the phases of disillusionment are real as you move into education. So the question really isn't so much, how do you get rid of the stress or the stressors? The question is there enough joy? And does it make you happy? And does it make you feel like it brings value to what you do every day? I am not skipping to work every day, right? But overwhelmingly, every day, every week, every year, and every career so far, not even close, the joy outweighs the stress, right? I mean, I think that that's important. And they have to be separate, because the stress isn't going to go away. If it goes away, you're not working hard enough. And if you're not working hard enough, you're not doing the things that are going to bring you the joy. That's the cycle we're in, right? Especially in music education. So now to give you the more straight answer, the stressors are what you would expect the stresses would be with any program. It's how do you provide the very best thing for each of your students with the resources that you have? It's the stress of competing interests. Education in general is a hot commodity right now. Students, parents, administrators, and teachers all are fighting for time, for minutes. And to do anything well, you need minutes. And at some point, you can't get minutes without somebody giving them up. And that can be stressful too. You know, there are stressful interactions with accountability, paperwork, email. There's stress about being able to spend the time you want and need to spend to do a good job for your students when you're being pulled on in all of these other areas. But the reality is the other areas wouldn't be there if they weren't important. They gotta get done. So if you can manage the stress, you'll find the joy. It just ends up to more minutes at the end of the day. See my previous comment.
Yeah. And then kind of at the conclusion of all those hard moments, what are some of the most rewarding moments in your job?
Oh my gosh. They happen every day. That's not hyperbole. Little things happen every day. I had this joyful moment last week on Friday, walking my fifth graders to the bus and just hearing them say that was fun to each other, not to me, right? We had done something special and they said that's fun. That sounds so mundane and so obvious to somebody that if somebody had fun, that they would express it. But I'm telling you, a 10-year-old boy has a lot of options for things to think are fun. They can do a lot of things, and they have a lot of excellent, incredible things to do, be it what they're watching on TV, be it sports, be it watching sports, what they listen to for music. Man, so if I can get a 10-year-old to play five notes on a trumpet and then leave and say it was fun, that is a big deal. It's a big deal. So that's a joyful moment. And extrapolate that out. At our high school, that might be literally the smiles of the kids running off the field at a Seahawks gig, right? Playing at a halftime at a Seahawks show. Or it might be a really special, joyful moment late at night. Everybody's exhausted on a trip, and we're all just proud about the work that we've done. But 99 out of 100 of those joyful moments are happening in a classroom or with students in front of me. And if they're not, if the joyful moments are that fantastic email I just wrote, then, you know, I'll probably start looking for a different gig.
Yeah, that's emails, not always the most advertised part of teaching.
Right. It's it's pervasive, I'm telling you.
So if someone was interested in eventually becoming like a music educator and similar band director like you, do you think a degree in music is a requirement at this point, or can necessary experience sort of fill that gap?
Yeah, it's necessary. Every state is different, and what you depending on what you teach is different. So it's one, if you're being hired as a specialist, where you're essentially a specialist in music, or you're a para, then a degree isn't necessarily required. But to teach music, you need a music endorsement in Washington State. So you would graduate with a music education degree. Now, a bachelor's meets that benchmark, and there's a lot of professional development that happens once you get the job. You don't necessarily have to pursue a master's degree, but for music educators who are moving out and into jobs, I would give the advice that as soon as you know you love it, you're going to want to advance your degree in order to get paid and to receive the financial benefit as soon as possible, because investing into your retirement account at those levels sooner in your career is one of the most important things you can possibly do as a young person going into education.
I think this is going to be probably the final question, but it's a question I've been having actually for a while. So right after I graduated, the COVID pandemic hit, and I was wondering, like, how did it affect your teaching, the direction of the band program, and maybe because you've kind of cultivated this sense of community within the Mercer Island Band Program, did, you know, keeping the program going throughout the pandemic sort of make the job more worth it despite the challenges?
What a great question. That question's been asked lots of different ways, right? And I think you asked it in a very specific way that I really value, right? This idea of keeping going make it more valuable or rewarding to me. There is no doubt that I and I think all my students and all of us, right, probably all of you, have a new appreciation for many of the elements of our lives that we didn't have before. And I know we even said that out loud right when it started, but I think we all feel that in a very different way now. In our program and for me, I feel excitement and a willingness to be present and enjoy the enjoyable moments from my students in a way that I didn't before. You know, Anita, you remember Mercer Island sometimes can be a very difficult place to be vulnerable. And the competitive academic environment can be really limiting, and it challenges students to be able to express themselves and say, this is something I love and I like my time here. And I'm going to say it out loud. And that has changed a little bit. And that's been really exciting. For me professionally, the epiphany or the overarching thing that I'll carry with me long, long past the pandemic is an appreciation for my colleagues and an appreciation for the support from the community of Mercer Island, to preserve and offer performing arts and fine arts in the lives of their students. Because nothing about what we did over the last 2 years has been easy. And it's been incredibly difficult, specifically for the performing arts. We are an ensemble activity. We're a group activity. And the nature of Zoom or teaching online, or even teaching with a mask on and a bell cover, doesn't just mute the instrument, right? It mutes what it is we're trying to do with and for each other. And in that regard, we're still in this pandemic. We're right in the thick of it, still. We still are not able to create and do and be what we want to do and be musically as artists. But boy, do we appreciate it more. And we're really grateful to be taking the steps we're taking now, and even more excited to be looking forward to whatever the other side of right now looks like. So I certainly appreciate that.
Having an optimistic approach, I feel like that's pretty on brand for you.
That's good to hear.
Okay, so thank you for talking with us today and answering all of our questions.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.